The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, I claim that this is my show. In fact, I even named the show the Eric Metaxas Show. But here's the thing. Every now and again, I have, the little people. I like to call them Albin. And
thank you.
Albin is a producer on this program. And he has a comedy career in his own right.
Yeah.
He interviews people. And I thought, Albin, I can't interview myself about my book.
No.
But you had suggested maybe you wanted to interview me about the book. And since I get to decide, the programming,
yes.
I thought I could say yes. I could say yes to that.
Really?
And you could interview me about the book. But I got to be honest with you, it makes me very nervous to be on this side of the table.
You should be.
To speak.
Yeah, because you're on the same side. You're always on, of course.
But, well, I guess we have to announce today is the official launch day for the book.
Yeah. Now, we're going to re-air this, but today is the first time, so this is great.
This is the first day of the rest of the life of this book,
That's true.
Think about that.
Wow.
Just do the math on that one.
Yeah.
Now, the crazy $14.97 price, I did find out. You thought I was lying or blowing smoke, which is a kind of lying. I did find out that that is not going to last forever. I think it's going to go away in a week. If you go to ericmetaxas.com and you click on those links, you get a scroll down. But there's a few links where the book is $14.97. That's 45% off.
Yes.
That, I was told yesterday, is in fact, as I feared, a limited offer.
Ooh.
So if you want the book, you've pretty much got a few days to get it at that price. And I keep saying, why not get 100 copies for Christmas?
Yes.
Why not?
Why
it's not going to kill you.
Please.
Okay, so,
okay.
Albin, I'm ready. I'm scared what you're going to ask.
Here we
go.
Ahead. Is atheism dead? Now, I want to start off with a quote from the back of the book, because this is very important. This kind of hones us in on what's going on.
Homes us in.
Homes. Watson Holmes. Okay. Hugh Ross, he's a big scientist. He said, with great oratorical skill and an irrepressible humor, Metaxas engages lay readers with the story of how recent discoveries have made atheism scientifically, historically, and philosophically untenable. And what I like about that, it divides the book into the three natural parts that you've done here in your writing.
It's divided into three parts, like gall.
It is. And the gall of you to put it all together like that.
Well, when he says irrepressible humor, it's not entirely irrepressible.
No.
I can repress most of it, but there's a lot of Three Stooges-style jokes in the book.
A lot of
rough physical comedy. There's some pie throwing. A lot of allusions, if you're really paying attention to the great Soupy Sales. And a lot of Hal Roach, Our Gang kind of gags
in
the book.
And a Harpo Marx quote, of all things.
Actually, that's true.
That's true. That is true.
There is a Harpo Marx quote in the book.
Who are you going to believe?
No, it wasn't Harpo. Harpo didn't speak. It was Chico.
Right.
Chico.
Chico. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, part one. I want to ask you a couple questions out of part one. Now, I'm serious when I was reading this, because part one is about outer space and inner space, in a way. And when I was reading it, I felt like I was on a higher plane, like kind of metaphorically and also not physically, certainly. But in there, you start talking about the planets and the fact that after the Big Bang, everything kind of stretched out and became the various planets. And only in our solar system, in our galaxy, and I guess ostensibly in the galaxy, all the galaxies, only in one place can life have happened on this planet. So I want to start at the beginning about life itself.
Right.
Okay, the question of how did we evolve from non-life?
Right.
That was the big question back in 1952, right? And we've had Dr. James Tour on the show talking about abiogenesis, right?
Right.
So can you explain abiogenesis and the whole idea behind that?
Yes, I can. Next question.
Okay. Now, the next question is all about...
Next question is, would I explain
it? Yeah, would you?
That's yes, the first question. Yes, I would.
Okay, please do that.
Okay, here's the thing. You made the common mistake that I actually write about in the book. This is so creepy. This is so interesting. In a funny way, this little thing, the little slip-up you made, which I write about in the book, gets to, in a sense, the thesis of the whole book.
Okay.
And here's what it is. You said... How did life evolve from non-life, right? Okay. Now, whether you believe in evolution or don't believe in evolution or don't care, whatever, it doesn't matter because I don't write about evolution in this book at all. But you have to define what is evolution. Evolution, according to those people who believe in evolution, typically is using the process of natural selection. You see change over time. What does that mean? We hear the standard story, right? If there's a bunch of giraffes and the ones with the longest necks can get the most leaves and they tend to survive, the giraffes with shorter necks, we call them oxen, they don't survive. I shouldn't joke. But the point is that that's the concept of evolution, is that over generations, okay, species change, and then some people say, oh, species don't just change within species, but they actually can become other species. So a frog can become an oak tree, although it takes a huge effort on the frog's part. He's got to want to be an oak tree. But the point is, in all seriousness, evolution can only happen, if it does happen, with life.
Yes.
But we never ask the question, and this is what you were getting at, mm-hmm. What about before there was life? Scientists say on the planet Earth, 4 billion years ago, there was no life. And then suddenly,
life.
Boom, there was single-celled life. The simplest life imaginable is one cell. That's all you need, and it's life. And we've seen it. We know what it is. And science tells us without any blinking, they just go, there's no doubt life came into existence 4 billion years ago on the early Earth. Okay, so here's the question. How did that happen? And what's funny is people will say, kind of like you did in misspeaking,
By the way, I put evolve in quotes my notes. Yeah.
So people say, well, it's the process of evolution from non-life.
Yeah.
And you say, there's no such thing as evolution from non-life. If you want to have any kind of evolution, it has to begin with life because life reproduces, and in every generation, there's potential for change, and so there can be change over time. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about there is no life, and then there is life. There is no way you can describe that as evolution. But when I did my research on this chapter about James Tour and all this stuff, I discovered that three of the main places where you look up the definition of what they call abiogenesis, right? Mm-hmm. Bio is life. Genesis is the beginning of. Abiogenesis is no life genesis, right? So you have no life, and then you get life. They say, they use the word evolution. They say it's the evolution from non-life to life. And I thought, these are dictionary definitions. We're talking Wikipedia. We're talking Merriam-Webster's. They all... Now, the reason I'm making such a big deal of this, you'll see, is that they have imported this concept, the fuzzy concept of evolution, which many of us have all kinds of questions about, but they've said, no, we can't have questions about that. Everybody knows it happened. And they've basically imported it backwards into a time before there was life. In other words, they act like it's a mystical principle in the universe. They don't say where it comes from. They have zero proof of the idea that anything could evolve from non-life to life, but they still use the term. And that gets at the heart of the whole book, is that what you really have here is not science. You have philosophy. Mm. And it's philosophy masquerading as science. You have people saying, I don't believe in God. There is no God. There is no way God created life. Therefore, I've got to figure out some naturalistic way that it happened. Now, when you get into the details of abiogenesis, it's comedy. I mean, the whole James Tour, we ran his interview with me the other day. It's actually funny because they're grasping at straws. But what amazes me is that they actually use the term evolution almost to kind of fool you a little bit. You know, it was one of the, it just happened.
Yeah, and
you think,
of hand.
How did it happen? It's churning water 4 billion years ago with no life in it, and then suddenly it just magically churns into a cell, which is one of the most complicated things imaginable. We're out of time. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works.
You live your life in the songs you hear on the rock and roll radio.
Folks, welcome back. I might be the host of the show, but Alvin is interviewing me about my book, which is brand new. It's called Is Atheism Dead? Alvin,
yeah.
When you asked that question before...
I'm grilling you, yeah.
When you asked that question, I gave the long answer.
I know you did.
If you want me to give the short answer,
yeah,
just say so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, here's a follow-up. I love this, because one of the atheistic scientists who realized he was trapped, he couldn't say this, he then came up with the theory that aliens from another planet came and established life on this planet. Now, how can you straighten him out? What can you say?
This is so funny, folks. This is why, I guess I hope people read the book, because we really don't have time to give you these details, but this is hilarious,
yeah.
Right? It's kind of like asking a kid, right?
Yeah.
He brings home a bong and some marijuana, and you say, what are you doing with that? And he says, Jimmy left it in the mailbox. And you're like, well, that's – who's Jimmy? Where did he get it from? Why did he leave it in your – like, what are we talking about? I don't really care about that. When somebody says – there's life on Earth. Where did it come from? People say, aliens brought it here. Next question. And you think, you've answered nothing.
Yeah, right.
You haven't told me, first of all, how do the aliens come into being, their life ostensibly?
Yeah.
You haven't told me how they came to bring it here. But this is part, again, this is part of what the book gets at. There's a creepy, and I really mean this, there's a creepy dishonesty.
Yeah.
That the scientific establishment, now, of course, this is by no means all scientists, but a number of dedicated materialists or atheists are so afraid of looking at the evidence that they will come up with any crazy answer just to shut you up. So this idea, who was it? I think it was Francis Crick. I mean, this is one of the discoverers of DNA, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So around 1972.
That's what did it. When he discovered DNA, he said, whoa, I just blew my own theories out of the water.
No, but
here.
That's actually true. I mean, that's actually true, that DNA is so complicated that you suddenly realize there's no way life can just whoop, whoop, whoop. Like, it's because of DNA coding, thanks to Francis Crick and Watson. It's so unbelievably complicated that science effectively has zero answers, which today they have no answers, right?
Yeah.
But even in 1972, they knew they had no answers. So they ask him, and he says, I think aliens brought it from some other place. And you think, are you joking? Like, this is like a junior high school student trying to blow smoke at the teacher because they didn't do the homework.
Yeah.
And if you say aliens brought it, anybody says, like, well, that's very nice, but I'm still asking you, how was the life formed? Not who carried it here.
Yeah.
Not what suitcase or what spacecraft. We're asking, how did life come into being from non-life? To this day, and this is why I find this stuff so funny, and James Tour, by the way, I wrote this book in part because of him.
Yes.
No one knows. I mean, no one knows
right.
how life came into being from non-life. But nobody even asked the question because everybody's so embarrassed that it's just one of those things you don't bring up.
Yeah.
And people like Dawkins, the arch atheist, the new atheist, he said, "Oh, we're working on it."
Yeah, we're working on it. We're working on a lot of things. Yeah, you know, one of the miracles you talk about in science and all that is the miracle of water. And my favorite thing, because, you know, we all say, like, well, how does it freeze and get bigger and how does it float above the water and all that? But what I love is the viscosity of water. I just love that when you explained it, or Dr. Tour did, where when water goes over rocks and things, it starts to break it down into the minerals that are needed for the for the plants to eat, and then the animals eat the plants, and they get the iron ore and
now
all that stuff.
You know I'm not kidding this when I say this, that like when somebody reads something that I wrote and gets it the way you just did, I'm thrilled. Because when I was writing that, I was thinking, I hope people really understand how amazing this is. Because none of us has ever thought of this. Nobody ever thinks about viscosity. Many people don't know what it even means. Yeah. What's viscosity? Okay, it wasn't James Tour. It was Michael Denton wrote a book on water. Now, there's other places where this is mentioned. But I never heard this in my life. And when I read this, I said, this is so insane. I've got to talk about this. So here's what it is, folks. Water, which we take for granted, has these bizarre properties that you'd never even think of. You just take it for granted, right? It happens to be just viscous enough, just thick enough, that when it runs over things like rocks, it is able to erode the rock. Okay. Right. If it was less viscous, which is to say thinner, it would just run over the rock and it wouldn't do any erosion. But water erodes rocks, it then carries the particulate that it has eroded with it, and then that acts like sandpaper as it continues to erode other rocks. And what happens is that as the water, perfectly viscous, erodes rocks, it carries the metals and the minerals
in nutrients.
These rocks and in the soil along with it, so that as far as the water goes, it carries nutrients, which get deposited miles and miles away from where it originated and from where those rocks are. So if you are a plant or an animal living in a place far away from those rocks, the water carries the minerals and the metals and every good thing down through the erosion process all the way to you. And the plant lives off of that and thrives off of that. And then the animals eat the plant and the animals get the minerals. And I thought to myself, this needs to be taught in schools because this is a bizarre thing, that if water were slightly different, and this is just one property.
Oh, yeah. The fact that it freezes and goes above the water so the fish underneath can still live in the wintertime is another incredible thing.
That's another one that
– yeah.
Who thinks about that? Like you think ice floats. Obviously it floats. You just look at a lake in the winter, it floats. I never thought of this. Most liquids, when they become solids, they sink.
Yeah.
Most liquids, when they become solids, they get more dense and they sink. Not water. Now water, and this is really nuts, water, like just about everything else, as it gets colder and colder, it actually does get denser, just as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But at 39 degrees Fahrenheit, okay, it's coming down, you know, 70 degrees, 60 degrees. So it's getting denser and denser and denser. When it hits 39 degrees, it reverses course and suddenly flips and becomes less dense as it goes down to 32. And at 32, it freezes and it is dramatically less dense than the liquid water, and it floats. And you think, I mean, anybody who knows chemistry would say that's an anomaly. That's very strange. But what's even stranger is if that weren't the case, there'd be no chance for life on Earth for many reasons. They say that if things were to freeze from the bottom up the way you'd expect them to if water didn't float when it turns into ice, it would kill a lot of the life. And also it would have a runaway freeze effect. But also the other thing is that because it freezes, it protects the water below from the even cooler temperatures above. I mean, it goes on and on.
It's amazing.
And I wrote a whole chapter on it. I said, ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to believe this, but water Could be exciting.
Yeah. Now, I want to jump into the second part of the book because that is actually my favorite. It's where you take a look at biblical archaeology and all the things that have been discovered. And my favorite chapter, I'm going to just jump to it right now, is the discovery of the home where Jesus grew up with Mary and Joseph. And I said, oh, come on. Did they discover a dreidel that's had Jesus' name on it?
Yeah.
How did they know?
Yeah.
But you start the chapter. This is what I love. You start by addressing that. You're saying, like, basically, yeah, how do they know? I mean, Nazareth was some small, out-of-the-way place in the Bible.
None of this stuff makes any sense until you look at the details.
And then when you start looking at the detail, each step you get blown away more and more and more. Like, why is it this house and why would it be that family, and how do you know?
No, it is straight up nuts. I mean, again, I know when I wrote this, I often don't talk about this in interviews because I thought it's too much of a stretch for people to believe. They're just going to bat it away.
Yeah, you have to take them step by step.
It's like saying I found the skull of Noah and his three sons.
Yeah.
And Ham's was misshapen.
Yeah.
No, let me just say, it's so weird that when I read it, I said, I think I'm making a mistake. Let me look into this.
Yeah, because you were making a mistake. I said, come on, this is kind of you're surmising. You're just saying, well, maybe. But no, the evidence is specific.
It's so insane. First of all, what I say is that when you think about what happened in the first century, it's obvious that anybody who knew Jesus and his mother, knew Peter, whatever, once Jesus is crucified and resurrected and ascends into heaven, suddenly all these people are half nuts, if not nuts. They are just crazy. They've seen the Messiah. He rose from the dead. They're telling everybody. They don't care if you kill them or torture them. They've seen life eternal. Death was destroyed. So they fear nothing. And they realize that they've been chosen by God to live in this amazing time. So what would be the most natural thing you'd do? You would preserve these sacred sites. You'd say, well, Jesus grew up there. Let me show you. He was a friend of mine. I saw him walking on the road to Nazareth many times. And let me show you where he lived. Let me show you where all of that stuff happened. We rarely talk about it. When we come back, I'll fill in the rest of the details. When you think it over,
hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204.
Okay, so we're talking about
Eric,
the discovery of the home in Nazareth where Jesus grew up.
Yeah.
Now, again, this sounds like, hey, we discovered Santa's workshop at the North Pole. Come on, check it out. It sounds insane.
Yeah.
And to me, when I read it, I said, this doesn't make any sense. But first of all, what I find funny is that it wasn't discovered until extremely recently.
Right.
Like literally a year ago, the book was published.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody knows about this. It was during COVID times. There's so much strangeness surrounding it that that explains why nobody's heard about it.
Yeah.
But anyway,
by the way, we're talking about the home where Jesus grew up with Mary and Joseph.
Which you would think for sure there's no way that could have been preserved. But what I discovered as I did all this research into archaeology, and obviously the middle third of the book is all about biblical archaeology, but you realize strange things. I mean, you realize that people then weren't any different than they are today. So the people who lived and who knew Jesus or who lived right after he ascended into heaven, they were nuts with this stuff. They said, this is the most amazing thing. So there is no doubt that any place associated with him was revered by his followers, who were in the many, many thousands and growing. And
there's several things that you point to that are the solid evidence that this is the house. One of the things is the shape of the bricks that were used to make that house, that particular house, were only made by a craftsman. And Joseph did that. He was a craftsman.
Well, actually, I'll go backwards to say, people would say, well, how would you know anything? How do you know find any house in the first century? Here's what I meant to say was that they preserved these places. The one thing that I was shocked at, I never heard this, that in 1968, they found in Capernaum the house of Peter.
Yeah, that one's great.
And you'd
That's
say,
great.
What are you talking about? How come I didn't know that? Yeah. Well, if you go to a trip to the Holy Land, maybe you went there and, you know, you didn't tell me. But they find these places. Why? Because they were so revered at the time that they memorialized them. They would build a church over the site to preserve it. It was such a holy place. Sometimes, 500 years later, they'd build a bigger church over that church. I mean, they so revered these spots. Now, you got a couple things going on. You got the Romans wanted to wipe out Christianity.
Right.
So the Romans often would go to these spots and, like, bulldoze them effectively, wipe it out, or even worse, build a pagan temple on top of it. They did that in the place where they did this at at Herod's temple on the Sermon Mount. They built a pagan temple up there, right after Jerusalem fell in 70 AD. At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, they built some pagan temple. They would always build pagan temples to desecrate the Christian sites.
Yes.
But ironically, of course, by doing that, they preserved the Christian sites because you say, oh, yeah, you see that? You know why that pagan temple is there? Because beneath it is the ruins.
And in the book, you have some photographs and you have graphs and all that explaining all that. So you can actually – you take people through, like, you're the archaeologist and you're looking at
it. I try. Yeah. I try.
And
so
it explains a lot of these. I like that when they found the Bema – is the Bema
the
seat?
Bema.
The Bema seat where Pontius Pilate sat and the pavement basically where Jesus stood.
This is one of the craziest things in the whole –
That is incredible.
But just to finish up the Nazareth thing – there were two extremely holy sites in Nazareth. One was, they call it, the Church of the Annunciation, where Mary grew up. And there were churches built over that. And you can go see that today. This other one, which ostensibly was where Jesus grew up with Mary and Joseph, was a church was built on top of it. Another church was built on top of it. But then in this 8th century, the Muslims came in and destroyed it totally.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until the 1880s that some nuns from France came to build a convent in Nazareth and excavated. And you know what? I don't want to tell the rest of the story yet.
Yeah.
For this one, you got to read the book. But you can't believe this stuff. Folks, look, read my footnotes. Find out where I got this from. You were just referring to something else now that I – oh, the Bema seat. This is slightly more controversial – where there are some people that would dispute this, but it seems to me right. There's a guy named Titus Kennedy. I've had him on this program before. He's an archaeologist. He says that the Antonia Fortress, where people typically, if you take a trip to Jerusalem, they'll take you there. They say this is where the Via Dolorosa began. This is where Jesus had his trial, whatever. They now say that's totally wrong. The pavement, the Gabbatha, Lithostrato, where this all happened, is from 100 years after Jesus. The right place is far on the other side of Jerusalem where I guess
Herod's palace, right? And it makes more sense as you explain in the book.
I mean, the details are extraordinary, but they show the very spot, the very pavement. And then there's this Bema seat, which is where Pilate would have literally sat to preside over this unbelievably historic, mythical moment in the history of the world. And you think, have we lived long enough that these things are being uncovered?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in the book that I said, this is being uncovered in our lifetime.
Yeah.
100 years ago, people didn't know about this stuff. So it's kind of exciting. And my theory is that more and more is coming out in science and in archaeology.
One thing I want to mention, and I think this is such a beautiful thing, it's called the Silver Caitiff of Hinnom Scrolls or something like that. First of all, the discovery of it by this recalcitrant
This is one of the funniest stories. When I discovered this story, a lot of times I'll discover something, right? And people have written about it, but I realized, but wait, there's a story behind the story? Mm-hmm. And they never tell the story behind the story. And I have to dig it out if you can find it. I found the story of what happened. And when we come back from the break, I'll tell the story. In 1979, they discovered
one of
the most amazing discoveries in or around Jerusalem, one of the greatest discoveries ever. But how it was discovered is, to my mind, unbelievably hilarious. So we'll be right back.
Gold Dutch treat, you were sweet, dark as shame, darling, dark as shame. Save those lies, darling, don't explain.
Hey, folks, you've all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Mike Lindell has an amazing offer for my listeners on his standard MyPillows. You'll get a standard MyPillow regularly $69.98, now only $19.98. You'll also receive deep discounts on all MyPillow products, such as MyPillow towels, mattress topper, My Slippers, and so much more. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square to receive Mike's standard MyPillow for just $19.98, or call 1-800-978-3057 and use promo code Eric. MyPillow is made in the USA with a 10-year warranty, so you know it's going to last, and a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. It's time to start getting the quality sleep we not only want but need. Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-978-3057. Use promo code Eric to take advantage of Mike's special offer on his standard MyPillow. That's MyPillow.com. Promo code Eric or 1-800-978-3057. MyPillow.com. Promo code Eric.
Okay, there are a lot of funny stories in the book. And usually when I do interviews, I don't get to tell these stories because I've got a glance over the top. But you just asked me about one of my favorites. I mean, I can't tell you how much joy this – I just laugh every time I think about it. But this was the discovery in 1979 of what's called the silver Ketef Hinnom scrolls. And what that means is these are incredibly tiny silver scrolls that were so tiny they were worn as amulets. And they had the priestly blessing, the Aaronic blessing, where the priest would say, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his countenance to shine upon you and give you peace. I mean, it's this holy thing from the scripture, okay, written in silver, in really proto-Hebraic, because this is from, 650 B.C. How was it found?
Yes.
If you read books in archaeology, it'll sort of tell you, oh, this was discovered here by so-and-so and so-and-so. Okay. But somehow in my research, because I have fun doing the research, I discovered this weird backstory, and the more I dug, the funnier it became.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the story. The guy whose last name, oh gosh, what is it? It's Barak. I can never say his name. It's we'll come to it.
I have the book here.
Right. But anyway,
it's not Jacob Stafford.
It's a 28-year-old. It's a 28-year-old guy studying archaeology in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. So he's a nobody. He's 6 years from his PhD, but he gets this idea in his head that below St. Andrew's Church outside the just right at the outskirts of Jerusalem, there are some old caves and burial caves, whatever. They looked like they've been excavated. There's nothing there. But he has a hunch that there's more to be found there. But he doesn't have any credibility or anything to get real archaeological students to help him. So he has to be really humble and say, I'll take anybody who can help me.
Gabriel Barkai.
He has to go, and archaeology club of 12 and 13-year-olds, they volunteer the kids can help you. So how'd you like 12 and 13-year-olds, annoying 12 and 13-year-olds, to help you on this big dig? So they do the dig. They find nothing. He's disappointed, and he says, well, you know what, at least we've got to photograph all these chambers, even though we found nothing. There was one kid that was so annoying to this Barkai that Barkai was like ripping his hair out, and he says, I can't take another minute of this annoying 12-year-old named Nathan, so here's what I'm going to do. All of these caves need to be photographed. The most distant one, or one of the distant ones, number Cave 25, he sends Nathan there, and he's really stern with him, like angry, like, hey, I've had enough out of you. I want you to clean that chamber. It's going to be photographed. I want it to be so clean that your mother could use it as a kitchen. Like, he really threatens the kid because this kid was very annoying.
Yeah.
So Nathan trundles off to this distant place. And the joy, of course, is that it's far away and we're not going to hear from this kid for 2 or 3 hours while he's doing what we told him to
do. But he takes a hammer with him, which a guy that you didn't realize.
Here's a weird thing. Nobody noticed.
Yeah.
But the kid is so annoying that to go clean the cave, he just happens to hide a hammer on his person. And when he's bored in this sacred chamber, okay, there's nothing there. It's got a stone floor or whatever. He takes the hammer out. Nobody knows this, okay? He's all alone and starts smashing the floor with the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this alone, I find it funny. The only reason he's there is because he was so annoying. They sent him as far away as possible, okay? But if he wasn't annoying enough, he had a hammer with him and decides to use the hammer to smash the floor. The bored Nathan smashes the floor with the hammer so hard that it cracks. It wasn't supposed to crack. And he finds a hidden chamber. He sticks his hand in the hidden chamber and is dragged into the bowels of hell itself. Just kidding.
No.
He puts his hand into the hidden chamber.
Yeah.
And he pulls out some stuff, some like little ceramics. He now is like, hey, this is what I'm here for. I'm not here to clean. I found, you know, treasure. So he runs to Barkai and tugs on his shirt. He's like, hey, look what I found. You could see Barkai. I could picture his hair standing on end. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
The annoying kid is back with some ancient treasure. So they run back to the place. Barkai sees that what he assumed was an empty place was, in fact, hiding this stuff. And the annoying kid was so annoying that he smashed the floor open or whatever. So he sends the kid home. And they spend days now excavating this secret hole.
Yeah.
And they pull out treasure after treasure. And the greatest treasure is what we described. An unbelievably tiny silver scroll. So delicate that they couldn't unwrap it for 3 years. They didn't know how to have the technology without destroying it.
Right.
But they could read the words inscribed in silver. Now, if it's inscribed on anything but silver, it doesn't last.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are amazingly old, they're not this old.
Yeah.
This is even older. So this is the first extant writing from the Hebrew Scriptures ever discovered, thanks to the annoying 12-year-old Nathan, who's probably in his mid-50s right now, and he doesn't know.
And when
he's
famous. When they first translated it, they thought it said, America runs on Duncan. But
that's right.
Wrong.
But they were wrong.
They were
with
wrong.
New technology, they were able to see that it's the Aaronic blessing.
The Lord bless and keep you. That's from Numbers chapter 6.
But I find it, there's more to the story, but
it's
I just
incredible.
Find it hilarious that the kid was so annoying, as 12-year-old boys can be, that he is sent like under threat to this secret chamber. And if he hadn't been sent there, and if he hadn't brought his trusty hammer to smash the floor he's supposed to be cleaning, to this day.
And I'm just blown away that the one that survived and the one that they could read is that blessing that we all need today, that the Lord bless and keep you and make his face shine upon you and give you peace. Jonathan Cahn ends his
maybe
every
he
day,
was that annoying kid, except now he's bearded and we wouldn't know.
No,
we don't know.
No,
we'll be right back.
Freedom, oh, freedom. Just some people talk.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me, just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze.
Hey there, folks. In the life of an author, the day that his book launches is a very exciting day, so I am very excited. You can tell I'm just excited. This is the book, Is Atheism Dead? And Alban has been very generously asking me questions about it.
Yeah. There's just so much
today.
In here.
There's one thing in here, because we're running out of time, but there's one thing in here. First of all, I'm not kidding when I say this, that if you go to, I think it's the Baker Book link at my website, ericmetaxas.com, this should be 45% off. I think it's this week only that I was told, yesterday, that it is a limited time only, $14.97 instead of $28. If you're thinking of getting copies, please don't miss that, because that's an insane price. But you wanted to ask me something about Richard Dawkins.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins, he apparently said that atheism, the belief in atheism doesn't lead anyone to violence. But there's a thing called scientific atheism that you mention in the book, And you can do a lot of pushback with that statement.
Oh, my gosh. First of all, we don't have time, but I'll just say this. That is one of many things that Dawkins and Hitchens in particular say that are so preposterous, so ludicrous, that they're really offensive because anybody who knows anything about history knows that they're lies. What he said is a lie. The most evil figures in the world, Stalin, Hitler, Mao, they have murdered millions, mm-hmm. not thousands, many millions, in the name of state-sponsored atheism. Many of those they murdered were Christians. I'm writing a piece about it right now to come out with the book, but that atheism, when enforced, leads to ugly stuff. Now, it's okay to be an atheist on your own. You want to be an atheist? Go ahead. But the point is, state-enforced atheism is the opposite of freedom, which cannot be enforced. It's a free thing. And I say this in part because we keep talking about religious liberty and ADF. When you start trying to push Christians out of the public sphere, as they are doing all over this country right now, it leads to every bad thing. So the fact that folks like Dawkins and Hitchens would pretend to be ignorant of this is a joke. They know the history, and they know that even in their own countries, there's a lot of coercion going on. We may not have the killing fields of Pol Pot yet, but the point is that the trend is always to persecute people unless you really believe in religious liberty. And atheist regimes are absolutely committed deeply to wiping out religious liberty. So let's be clear. In this country right now, we're seeing religious liberty being canceled. So since we're ending here, at least this hour, let me remind you, we need your help with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Folks, they are the front lines. They are working hard. Great lawyers getting paid much less than they could anyplace else to do the work of protecting liberty in the United States of America. You can call them 855-547-5333, 855-547-5333. Or you can go to our website, radio website, MetaxasTalk.com. We want to give you prizes and things to thank you. But most of all, we want to exhort you to do this now, because if you don't fight now, you won't be able to fight tomorrow. This is getting bad. We still have a voice. We still have money. The government wants to begin to control and monitor our money. There's all kinds of abrogations of freedom happening. We must fight with everything we have today, or our ability to fight goes away. So please, please go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the Alliance Defending Freedom. Please be generous. It is very important. I'm not overstating this even slightly. The number 855-547-5333, 855-547-5333. God bless you. As you give, you're helping your country, and we need that help. Thanks, Albin, for all you do,
friend. Thank you for your book.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.